This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 28th of July 2017. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 27th of July 2017, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: major scheme has stalled, council hears; campaigners confident over Holmes' plan; and public anger over hostel. So we'll start with the story behind the first headline.
Major scheme has stalled, the council hears. The redevelopment of the former police headquarters in Winchester has stalled, a meeting heard. Work appears to have stopped on the 200-home redevelopment off Romsey Road by developer Barclay Holmes. Councillor Lucille Thompson told the council meeting last Wednesday evening that the scheme has stalled. Nothing is happening there in spite of hoardings saying the launch would be in April. Now they have changed the hoardings, she said. Councillor Thompson, leader of the Liberal Democrat group, added, "There is no work going on. Rumours are circulating locally as to what is happening." This was going to deliver a significant amount of affordable homes in the city centre, which is where we want them. In February, Barclay denied that there were any delays, saying the plans were being amended. The firm was asked to comment on Councillor Thompson's comments, but had not responded at the time of going to press. The scheme, which also included an underground car park and path for bikes and pedestrians, was approved by council planners in February last year. Responding to Councillor Thompson, council leader Caroline Horrell said he would ask officers to check with Barclay what is happening. She said other major schemes, such as Barton Farm, now officially known as King's Barton, were progressing well. In the first week of this month, 26 private houses were occupied. The first 8 shared equity homes will be handed over in August, with a further 4 by the end of that month. The first tranches of rented houses will be handed over in November. But Councillor Horrell, in a written answer to a question, said, "However, it may be correct to say that the outlook for large-scale market housing delivery generally is less certain at the moment than it has been for several years, with the effect of Brexit on demand and supply one of the contributing factors. This could lead to a slowing of construction in areas where the market is less vibrant. It is therefore important that the City Council makes its direct contribution to affordable housing delivery. The City Council is committed to building 300 council homes by 2020, with 100 already on site. Regarding the major development at North Whiteley in the City Council's southern parishes, Councillor Ian Tate said he had heard that developer Bovis is, quote, in trouble," end quote.
Campaigners confident over Holmes' plan. Campaigners against a scheme to build more than 5,000 homes near ancient woodland in Hampshire say it could be thrown out. As previously reported, Eastleigh Borough Council chose the area to the north and east of Bishopstoke and Fair Oak as the preferred location for development, which could see 5,200 homes, shops, schools, open spaces and a new access road north of Albrook, Bishopstoke and Fair Oak. However, during a council meeting on Thursday night, councillors stressed that work was still in progress and more evidence was needed before taking a decision. The final decision on the plans, known as Option B and C in the borough's local plan, could be made as late as this winter after the council has considered surveys on the impact on transport and the environment. Now members of Action Against Destructive Development Eastleigh, later referred to as ADD, said the outcome of the meeting gave them, quote, a great glimpse of hope, unquote. John Lowry's, a member of ADD, said, the evidence is not there yet, and we believe that the evidence, when it is all complete, will prove our point that options B and C are not the best options. Even if the council chooses B and C, we'll keep fighting because we believe the plan will be found unsound by the planning inspector. During the meeting, the impact on traffic, environment, local infrastructures, the River Itchen and ancient woodlands such as Upper Barn and Crowd Hill Copse Woods were cited by objectors. Responding, Councillor Keith House, leader of the council, said the borough was very much aware of the concerns and would be looking at them, quote, incredibly seriously, unquote, before making any decision. He said there was still much evidence to assess. In an official statement, the council said, the council is committed to ensuring the environment and important habitats, including ancient woodland and the River Itchen, are properly protected, along with the conservation of the wide diversity of wildlife that live in the area. We will ensure that an engagement process is undertaken before a final decision is made, anticipated to be later in the year.
Public anger over hostel. Angry residents living close to a hostel in Winchester say they are at their wits' end after constant problems with drug addicts and antisocial behaviour. In a heated Police and Communities Together meeting, known as PACT, residents told how they have suffered constant bad language, drug dealing, vandalism and threats from people connected with Westview House in Hyde. Some local people even say they will now sell their homes and move away. Police say they are aware of the issues and have held talks with Winchester City Council and A2 Dominion, who run the hostel. It comes after there was a suspected arson at the hostel earlier this month, which resulted in one person being taken to hospital and a man charged. Residents say they have been threatened by users and visitors to Westview House. One said a person had threatened to burn down their house if they complained about noise to the council. We are at our wits' end. I have seen people getting ill with the worry of it. It seems to me that people have their rights, but we have human rights too. One man said, I saw someone so smashed on spice. He threw down litter from the bin. You could not deal with people like this. You get shouted at. Nothing gets done when they are running wild and running round the back of the alleyway. Nothing gets done, and I'm moving because of it. Another resident who complained about noise to a woman was threatened with a bottle. Other residents say they have seen drug dealing and said little has been done. Police say they recognise there are issues at the home and there is to be action, but could not disclose further details. PCSO Kate Barnes said, if you've seen people dealing or taking drugs or people on spice who seem to be getting incredible strength, you need to ring 999. Davina Damon Holland from the Winchester City Council Community Neighbourhood Services told residents it's a big issue and we are trying to deal with it. A police spokesman said Sergeant Matt Fancett from Winchester's Neighbourhood Policing Team said it is a priority to solve the issues in the area and they are taking a robust approach. Group Director of Supported Housing at A2 Dominion, Pam Vassier, said, we are aware of the issues of antisocial behaviour linked to Westview House. We take all reports of antisocial behaviour very seriously and we are working with residents, agencies and the local police to resolve and address the specific concerns as soon as possible. A City Council spokesman said, Westview House is located next to a City Council sheltered housing scheme and we are working with partner agencies to tackle the cause and effect of antisocial behaviour in the area. This includes working with A2 Dominion staff at Westview House. We are working closely with three concerned members of the public who have reported antisocial behaviour. The police, community safety team and the City Council housing officers are visiting the area daily.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements, which will be followed by Christian comment. Collins, Ted Collins, on the 15th of July, aged 90. Hutchins, Leslie William Hutchins, on the 14th of July. Parrish, Christina Roslyn Parrish, on the 13th of July. And Prouting, Betty Prouting, on the 10th of July, aged 79.
Christian comment this week is written by Rosemary A. Baker, and she entitles it, Alone in a Crowded Room. Loneliness seems very prevalent in our society today. It is marked by a sense of solitude. Solitude, on the other hand, is a state of being alone without being lonely. As the world spins faster and faster, or so it seems, when an email can travel around the world in fractions of a second, we mortals need a variety of ways to cope with the resulting pressures. We need to maintain some semblance of balance and some sense that we are steering the ship of our life. Otherwise, we feel overloaded, overreact to minor annoyances, and can feel that we can never catch up. Often people find seeking and embracing solitude is a good way to deal with this. However, there is an important distinction between solitude and loneliness, though the terms are often used interchangeably. From the outside, they look similar. Both are characterised by solitariness, and here the resemblance ends. Loneliness is a negative state, marked by a sense of isolation. One feels that something is missing. It is possible to be with people and still feel lonely, perhaps the most bitter form of loneliness. Solitude is the state of being alone without being lonely. It is a positive and constructive state of engagement with oneself. Solitude is desirable, a state of being alone where you can provide yourself wonderful and sufficient company. Solitude is a time that can be used for reflection, inner searching, or growth of or enjoyment of some kind. Deep reading requires solitude. So does experiencing the beauty of nature. Thinking and creativity usually do too. Solitude suggests peacefulness stemming from a state of inner richness. It is a means of enjoying the quiet and whatever it brings that is satisfying and from which we draw sustenance. It is something we cultivate. Solitude can be refreshing, an opportunity to renew ourselves. In other words, it can replenish us. Loneliness is harsh, a punishment, a deficiency state, a state of discontent marked by a sense of estrangement, an awareness of excessive or excess loneliness. Solitude is something you choose. Loneliness is imposed on you by others. We all need periods of solitude, though we differ in how much. Some solitude is essential. It gives us time to explore and know ourselves. It is the necessary counterpoint to intimacy, what allows us to have a self worthy of sharing. It gives us a chance to regain perspective and renew us for the challenges of life. It allows us to get back into the position of driving our own lives rather than having them run by timetables and demands from the outside world. Solitude restores body and mind. Loneliness depletes them and causes both physical and mental ill health. Jesus was the first to go into the wilderness in search of solitude, for renewal, and to prepare for the tasks ahead, and certainly not the last, as the lists of his followers testify.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. We've got quite a crop this week, but I think they're all worth hearing. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. You can email letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So we'll start off now with the first letter,
which is entitled Chronic Dilemma, and it's from Michael Carden, who is the Vice Chairman of the City of Winchester Trust. Sir, last week your perceptive editorial, Chronicle, July the 20th, and Joanna Lewis's article reveal a recurrent dilemma for local authorities when embarking on a development. Having done their best to gather widespread public input about the content and design, how do they then handle the inevitable differences of opinion that will arise and the unavoidable impracticability of some people's wishes? We strongly agree with John Hearn that expert professional knowledge should guide the City Council's briefs for their own projects, not only in terms of what is possible and viable, but also their layout and appearance. However, this will not avoid indignation on the part of those whose preferences appear to have been ignored, or whose personal taste is offended. Most historical development was reviled by many when first built. Of the National Gallery, for example, it was said in 1838, "Not one of our lately erected buildings has been the object of more general, unqualified, and invidious censure than this." Unless a local authority development and its design is to be approved by referendum, heaven forbid, the best solution is to hold an architectural competition and appoint an expert and respected jury to select the most appropriate scheme. For private developments, we must rely on the expertise of the planning department, which should include expert urban, landscape and architectural professionals. Michael Carden, Vice Chairman, City of Winchester Trust, Upper Brook Street, Winchester.
Brendan Denikin writes, expert ignored. Sir, I would have thought Joanna Lewis was in favour of experts, Chronicle, July 20th. But only, it seems, if they give the views that she likes. She argues for the Silver Hill scheme to focus on archaeology. Didn't Professor Martin Biddle, the director of the Winchester Research Unit, who has forgotten more about Winchester archaeology than most of us will ever know, dismiss that idea in the Chronicle? Brendan Denikin, St Cross Road, Winchester.
Bob Barnes entitles his letter, Take Inspiration from Poundbury. Sir, the majority of your correspondents this week are optimistic, and Joanna Lewis is pessimistic, as shown in the Chronicle of July the 20th. We spent last week in Dorchester, and I recommend all who can, including our councillors, to visit Poundbury and to assimilate the architecture and layout. It's really inspiring. Perhaps they should ask Prince Charles's team of planners and architects to contribute to Silver Hill. I suggest a further addition to the building mix. In addition to affordable homes, the council should invest in and own affordable shops to be let to small traders who have been squeezed out of Winchester by high rents. Our shops are dead and dreary and need a pick-up of this sort. Bob Barnes, Elizabeth Place, Chilburton Avenue, Winchester.
This next letter is from Hugh Thomas, and it's entitled Expert Advice 2. That's 2 rather than T-O-O, T-W-O rather than T-O-O, or just T-O.
Very well explained.
Shall I start the letter?
Yes, I think so.
Sir, may I take issue with John Hearn, Chronicle Letters, July the 20th? He advocates the importance of consulting council experts. That is precisely what shouldn't be happening, if only because they were the very people who were involved in the disastrous Silver Hill scheme. Winchester is blessed with many professional people who have far more proven talent, considerable knowledge, and the imagination that is much needed. The town hall officers are not the sole arbiters of architectural merit, even if others try to set them up to be. That's from Hugh Thomas, Southgate Street, Winchester.
The next letter is from David Atragi. It's headed slanted. Sir, bravo for highlighting the howling bias in interpretation of the results of the public consultation so far on the proposed plans for the new leisure centre. Chronicle, July the 20th. I took part in it and my responses appear to have been misrepresented. I am not surprised. My family and I are frequent users of River Park Leisure Centre, but we didn't have any strong feelings in favour of either site. However, one of my responses was to point out that the closed questions asked during the public consultation appeared to me to be have written in order to elicit responses in favour of the Bar End location. That made me suspicious. The recent apparently selective and slanted presentation of the data reinforces my suspicion that an agenda is being pursued. I don't know what it is or why, but yes, I would urge other residents to pay attention to this proposed development. David Atragi, Elm Road, Winchester.
Peter Rees entitles his letter Sport for All. Sir, the news of the consultation feedback for the new leisure centre at Bar End has already received, quote, overwhelming support, unquote, is a really substantial endorsement and a vindication of the ideals over many years that have produced this outcome. No matter what the slight discrepancies in the responses might be, this magnificent proposal must get unanimous and generous support from the City Council. Apart from the provision of facilities that the already healthy and fit population might use, there are very important underlying health reasons why this proposal needs to be brought to fruition. The overall health of the nation, especially our young people. In the UK, a quarter of children aged 2 to 10 and a third aged 11 to 15 are either overweight or obese, as are two-thirds of the adult population. Obesity and overweight are the most frequent and common factors linked to type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, cancer, heart disease, stroke, and asthma. One in five children starting school at 5 and one in three leaving school at 16 is overweight. Some 21% of boys and 16% of girls aged 5 to 16 do not have the recommended levels of physical activity. These facts are not designed to ridicule or blame anyone for their lifestyle choices, but they are stark facts about the risks and consequences associated with a lack of exercise and deteriorating health being embedded from a very early age. The pressure on the NHS as a result of not taking responsibility for personal health is evident. Excess television viewing, a sedentary lifestyle, smoking and fast food are responsible, creating a time bomb of health issues for everyone, but especially the young. The correlation between poverty and obesity is strong, highest in the 10% most deprived in the UK, increasing through austerity. Bar End and its philosophy for the promotion of a healthier lifestyle for all, leisure, sport and the enjoyment of physical relaxation will go some way to help address those serious health issues. As a welcome step forwards, good health and well-being, let's get behind it all the way. Peter Rees, Chairman, Winchester Constituency Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
"Don't move," writes Anne Gildersleeve. "Sir, I am a regular swimmer at River Park Leisure Centre and have been for many years. I was also a member of the Health and Fun Club, attending Keep Fit classes until my knee became very painful and I'm waiting for a replacement. I do hope that the River Park Leisure Centre could be kept open. I'm sure any repairs could be financed somehow," Chronicle, July the 20th. "River Park is an ideal situation in the middle of Winchester, easily accessible from every side by foot, bicycle, bus and car. I can understand young athletes being keen for an Olympic-sized pool, but the regular swimmers are very happy with the pool at River Park. I know that the bike ride from St Cross is easier for me than perhaps cycling along a busy Garnier Road with all the speeding cars coming off the motorway. I have often thought it would be wonderful if we could have an outside pool adjoining the inside one. Where my daughter lives in Hitchin, there is just that, an outdoor pool next to the inside one, and I have thoroughly enjoyed taking my grandchildren there in the summer. Anne Gildersleeve, Cripstead Lane, St Cross."
Kim Gottlieb writes, "Questions to ask. Sir, the Chronicle is right to question and to interrogate every aspect of every major development. It can always count on my support for doing that. However, there is no need for it to be sceptical, as it was in last week's editorial, about the recent survey undertaken by Stride Treglown in respect to the proposed new sports centre at Bar End. The chief reason for this is that the survey audience was self-selecting. Quite simply, no one would have bothered to attend the various consultations if they were not actively involved or interested in sport. Thereafter, it should not be a surprise that this audience was fully aware of the shortcomings of the River Park Leisure Centre and that they would universally welcome the greatly improved facilities proposed. The question that is less easily answered is, how did River Park get in such a poor state, given the phenomenal financial assistance that the operator, Places for People, has received from the council, i.e. the taxpayer, over the years? The benefits of sport and the case for a new facility are now unarguable, but the Chronicle should carry on asking questions about the new facility, particularly regarding its cost to build and its future operation. Non-sports folk, i.e. all taxpayers, should be interested in this too." That's Kim Gottlieb, City Councillor for Aldswood and the Itchen Valley, East Stratton.
Dr. Michael Bennett entitles his letter, "Stay at Park." "Sir, given that River Park Leisure Centre has been allowed to decay, it is hardly surprising the Chronicle can report a new centre has, quote, overwhelming support, unquote, as mentioned in July the 20th edition. The need for better sporting facilities for local residents is clear. The first question to ask is, where should it be situated? A prestigious sports centre with an Olympic pool at Garrison Ground will attract thousands from afar, given easy access along the M3 and the M27. It may help fill the council's office's coffers, but is unlikely to benefit most local residents. If residents living in the centre want to use the proposed centre, then they are likely to crawl in heavy traffic along Chesil Street. Once the parking in Garrison Ground car park is full, drivers will be directed to the nearby park and ride. I suspect that very quickly, many will not bother. In short, there will be less sport for local people, but more pollution. I cannot believe the eagerly awaited Hampshire County Council's transport strategy for Winchester will encourage even more motor traffic to use the congested Chesil Street. I fully support the vision of a regenerated city centre, which is for mixed uses, that is, not just shops, but the benefit of the whole community. I therefore cannot support the removal of the leisure centre from a central position at River Park and pushing it to outskirts on Garrison Ground. The City Council should redirect its focus on the River Park site. It is adjacent to the city centre and many thousands of residents can access it on foot or on bicycle. The Council's initial proposal for a new centre at River Park included concreting over a cricket pitch and was understandably rejected. At the public meeting, it became clear that alternative designs had not been considered, but many residents made helpful proposals. The council went to the trouble of recording all these suggestions, but I've seen no evidence of them being considered. Please, could the city council, under new leadership, think again? Dr. Michael Bennett, Portington Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
A good start, writes Terry Gould. Sir, what a promising start. The Central Winchester Regeneration Project really does have legs at last. Chronicle, July the 13th. The City Council commissioning urban designers JTP, the excellent public engagement process, the design framework ideas so far, changes to King's Walk area, revamped Friars Gate parking, a partial refurbishment of the bus station, and a lot of interest in creating a cultural centre, and even the tired old Brooks shopping centre attracting investment. Keep up the momentum. Free up Lower High Street of buses and begin a serious archaeological exploration of land now vacant in the bus station. Any new finds could inspire the creation of a medieval history centre. Winchester is unique. Maybe begin to think of all the centre within the walls, plus Hyde Abbey forming a historic resource which attracts people and investment. Lots of well-signed trails and sites are simple and cheap to do, together with a history and cultural centre feeling studies in local schools and internationally. Winchester would be a newly energised, vibrant whole. That's from Terry Gould, Fairfield Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Holmes U-turn, writes Jeff Naylor. Sir, the area north of Bishopstoke is known as Stoke Park. It is aptly named, being a green lung of fields, woodland and a farm. Although the land is privately owned, it is richly served by a well-used network of public rights of way, giving local residents the opportunity to enjoy the recreational and health-giving benefits of the countryside right on their doorstep. It is on this irreplaceable part of the beautiful Hampshire countryside that East Lee Council proposed to build houses. Campaigners say plans for 5,000 homes near ancient woodland will be thrown out as the row continues. That was recorded in the Daily Echo on July the 22nd. There are great many concerns about this and associated development, including a new arterial road encroaching into the rural parish of Coldon Common, opening up future opportunities to extend the south coast urban sprawl towards Winchester. At the council meeting, it was said by councillors that more evidence is needed. Councillor Keith House, leader of the council, responded to concerns, said that the council will be looking at them incredibly seriously before making any decision. Incredibly seriously can mean improbably seriously. This may have been a slapdash use of English or a Freudian indication that his mind is made up. If the latter, it is up to local residents to unmake it for him, either through the strength of their arguments or at the ballot box. That's by, excuse me, Jeff Naylor, Birch Close, Coldon Common.
Doors opening, writes Phil Yates. Sir, congratulations to Nikki Gottlieb and her team for planning an excellent brochure of events over the Heritage Open Days in September, excelling her first programme last year, which was a great success too, as reported in the Chronicle July 20. I know the public will take this rare opportunity to explore venues not normally open to them. It also gives those of us conducting tours to have an informal chat to them, and sometimes, as I have found in the past, someone saying, "Do you remember me? We were at school together." Or, "I was your secretary at Godwin's many years ago." Who knows what will happen on this, my final year of conducting tours at the Theatre Royal. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
David Bailey writes about the church being at odds. "Sir, your paper on July the 13th carried an article on page 3, entitled Party Celebrates Garden in the Close, in which the picture was captioned and the text described the blessing by the new Dean, Catherine Ogle of Flower Beds, within the Dean Garnier Garden in the Cathedral Close. I ask those in senior positions within the Church of England if they ever stop to consider how this makes two people of the same sex feel when priests within their church are, by contrast, expressly prohibited from likewise blessing their committed and loving relationships within civil partnerships or civil marriage. How is the institution of the Church of England still apparently so at odds with the belief that God loves all people everywhere, both equally and unconditionally? How at odds is it still with the secular human values of equality and mutual caring? And where is the Church's encouragement and example in matters of love, acceptance and inclusion without qualification or exception?" So writes David Bailey, Priors Barton, St Cross.
Adam Nicholas writes about a moving problem. "Sir, re-alleged drug dealing at the skate park, Chronicle, July the 20th. Now that the police are aware of these issues, what are they going to do? Get the council to remove the facility? Might as well, so that the skateboarders can get back to practising their stunts in the Cathedral Close instead. More, E, Vicar. What exactly has removing the benches and the fountain in Middlebrook Street achieved? All it has done is to displace the antisocial behaviour to other areas of the city. It hasn't solved anything. The police in Southampton and Portsmouth have not given up on their city centres. Far from it. And as such, there is plenty of seating. Here, the public are sitting on the pavement or steps, which the City Council is also in the process of removing. This is most certainly going to displace shoppers from the Brooks. And by the time they finish constructing the patio outside the ice cream parlour, summer will be over." That's written by Adam Nicholas, Painters Field, St Cross.
Bob Whitmarsh entitles his comments, "Lane Needed." "Sir, Keith Webb, in the Chronicle of Letters, July the 20th, makes the case for a cycle track in Eastern Lane. As a frequent cyclist in Winchester, I strongly agree. It is not pleasant for cyclists to have a queue of traffic building up behind them as they labour up the hill. But Winchester has many hilly roads, and Eastern Lane is not an exception. Exactly the same situation can occur on the uphill sections of Andover Road, approaching the railway bridge, on Stockbridge Road up to Berwick Road, on the lower part of Romsey Road, on Magdalen Hill, and even in the upper part of St George's Street. In the past, opportunities were missed to provide a cycle track on Andover Road when the railway bridge was rebuilt, and Stockbridge Road when the hill was remodelled. Can we hope that the local councils are now more aware of the needs of cyclists and other road users the next time such opportunities arise to include an uphill cycle lane? I have tried without success to establish whether the new bus station will provide cycle racks, preferably covered, for bus passengers to use. It was partly reassuring that JTP architects, in a presentation about the redevelopment of central Winchester, recognised that cycle infrastructure in the city centre is poor or limited, and also that sheltered cycle parking facilities should be provided in a location that is central and overlooked, secure within the public realm. Planners, please note, Bob Whitmarsh, Berwick Avenue, Winchester.
This letter is about supply teachers, and it's from Councillor Peter Edgar, the Executive Member for Education at Hampshire County Council. Sir, in relation to the use of supply teachers by Hampshire schools, Chronicle, July the 13th. Firstly, it is important to understand that a significant amount of the £8.5 million spent on supply teachers will be covered by staffing budgets where supply teachers are in place to cover vacancies. In perspective, 1.5% of the total budget is a small price to pay when you consider that the alternative would be that children would be severely affected if they are without a teacher. Whilst the NUT might claim using supply teachers is a scandal, in fact, the figures in Hampshire suggest a perfectly reasonable situation. We have an excellent partnership with schools, and by working with us through our economies of scale, we enable them to achieve excellent value for money and extensive financial savings. For example, we have been able to negotiate supply teacher contracts to achieve £1.48 million of savings. Furthermore, collectively, Hampshire schools saved nearly £4 million this year by buying pens, pencils and other equipment from our county supplies unit. Head teachers and governing bodies work hard to retain staff and recruit quality teachers. Obviously, the ideal would be for schools to always have sufficient numbers of staff to cover for every eventuality, but in reality, this isn't always possible. Hampshire County Council has been working with schools, driving a major countrywide teacher retention and recruitment programme. As a result, we are successfully attracting teachers to both fill vacancies and build capacity to ensure that schools have enough staff to meet forecast increased demand for places, for which we have committed to the most significant capital building programme, £300 million, in this council's history, to provide 18,275 new primary and secondary school places by 2020. However, inevitably there will always be circumstances where schools need to hire supply teachers for short periods, when there is no internal solution, and when it would be more expensive, financially unviable, to recruit for more permanent staff, even on a short-term basis. Such instances might include cover for teachers to attend continuing professional development opportunities, or to allow them time away from the classroom to fully prepare and plan for lessons. In Hampshire, 90% of schools are judged as being good or outstanding by Ofsted. This would not be possible without school leaders having the ability to provide cover for staff absence or vacancies through the use of high-calibre supply teachers when they are needed. That letter is from Councillor Peter Edgar, Executive Member for Education, Hampshire County Council, Winchester.
Joy Pitts writes, Austin Tribute. Sir, I travelled down from Derbyshire to be part of the whole day celebrations at Winchester Cathedral for the 200th anniversary of Jane Austen's passing. It was an amazing day, with diverse events, including the launch of the new £10 note by the Bank of England. The Dean and Dr. Gillam Dow made special tributes to Jane Austen, not only about her resting place at the cathedral, but also how she is now has the ability to travel the world in our pockets and purses. The Dean also praised their summer exhibition, Inspired by the Word. and how artists have been selected to create art. It is an honour to have my portrait of Austin made from labels and pins included in the exhibition, particularly with such a local and global dedicated audience. And the exhibition ends on September the 30th. That's written by Joy Pitts, Ilkeston, Derbyshire.
That concludes the letters. I trust you found them all interesting. Rather more than usual, but I thought it was worth putting them all in. We now come to items of historical interest, and we have them from 100, 50 and 25 years ago.
100 years ago, on Saturday, July the 28th, 1917. The clerk informed the committee of St John's School that he had received a letter from the head constable calling attention to a case of damage being done by children gathering privet for the purposes of nature study. The chairman remarked that the question was one which the committee had before them on several occasions, and it was desirable that they should ask the head teachers to instruct the children that when gathering specimens for the purposes of nature study, that they should not do damage to private property. He was quite sure that the children did not intend to do anything that was wrong.
50 years ago, Saturday, July the 29th, 1967, there are two pieces here. And the first piece is this. Last-ditch local efforts to dissuade Hampshire County Council from pulling out of any proposals for joint local authority ownership of Herne Airport were heavily defeated by the council at Winchester on Monday. The meeting overwhelmingly approved a recommendation from the council's finance committee to inform Dorset County Council, Bournemouth Borough Council and the Board of Trade that the council did not wish to participate in the purchase of the airport. The committee's report had recalled that in 1961, a white paper had set out the government's proposals to cease to maintain certain airports, including Herne, and to offer them to the appropriate local authorities before taking steps to dispose of them in the open market. This is the second piece. After some 7 years in their shop at the corner of Jury Street and High Street, Winchester, Messrs. Jaeger Co. Limited have moved to new premises just a few doors higher up in the High Street to 88 and 89. Opening day for the new fashion shop on Friday in the last week provided an opportunity for customers and friends to enjoy the firm's hospitality and to inspect both the commodious and well-appointed showrooms and the comprehensive range of exclusive garments from the famous Jaeger range. Although the name of Jaeger is so well known, its romantic origin may not be so familiar. It was around 1880 that Mr. L.R.S. Tomalin, the grandfather of the firm's last chairman, translated a book called Health Culture by a German scientist named Dr. Jaeger, who firmly believed that wool, being an animal fibre, was more suitable as a protection to the human body than vegetable fibres, like cotton or linen. The editor's note here says, Jaeger closed their Winchester store on St George's Street last month.
And 25 years ago was Friday, July the 31st, 1992. Winchester City Liberal Democrats have voiced concerns over the proposal to make the High Street from the traffic lights to the Upper High Street one way. A number of alternative ideas were suggested, for example, making North Wall's two-way traffic again from the bottom of Friesgate up to the junction with City Road. This, say the Democrats, would help to alleviate some of the traffic problems by taking traffic coming from the south of the city directly through to the north without actually filtering through the town centre. Anne Bailey was concerned about the traffic problems which might be caused when there are accidents on the M3. Winchester would be the escape route on these occasions. Milner Hall in the centre of Winchester was packed on Tuesday evening for a meeting on the shopping plans for the city. With Tesco's hat already in the ring since it bought land at Bar End and Waitrose apparently ready to put forward a plan, members of the City Consumers Group, Preservation Trust and Residents Association called the meeting. Shoppers, shop owners and councillors discussed competition, quality and competition, quality and continuity, with Harvey Cole, the former county councillor and economic consultant, and Simon Birch, Winchester's chief planning officer, addressing the audience on what could happen. Tesco's had acquired land at Bar End on the site of the golf driving range that would be proposed for a store of some 70,000 square feet, or about one-third larger than the existing Sainsbury's at Badger Farm. Waitrose were interested in the cattle market site off Worthy Lane, which, if it went ahead, would lead to a store slightly larger than the present Waitrose in Romsey.
That concludes the historical items, and next we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, followed by letter from Westminster by our MP, and then finally there is a first person from Khalid Aziz.
So, the Hampshire Chronicle, in its 243rd year, their editorial comment, entitled "Too Early to Sign the Knell of Indie Shops," and the word indie is in inverted commas. "Sad news that the independent Cadogan Outfitters on the Square is poised to close after collapsing into administration. There has been a sense of shock, because over 25 years, the upmarket clothing store has been the epitome of an independent shop, self-confident and quirky." Cadogan proprietor Alex Edwards knew of the vagaries of retail at first hand. For several years, he and TV chef James Martin, who cut his teeth at the Hotel Duvin in Southgate Street in the mid-1990s, owned a delicatessen on the square called Cadogan and James, before rent rises made it unprofitable. "It is not a local newspaper's role to be a blind cheerleader for its community. Supportive, yes, but not afraid to criticise if it thinks it is warranted. However, criticisms of Winchester as a shopping destination are wide of the mark. The days of owner-operated independents dominating the high street have been history for years. Boots and W.H. Smith have been on the high street for a combined total of nearly 200 years. The hard fact is that independent shops have always come and gone, and only a few, such as B.E. Chaplin, 1932, Warren and Son, 1835, and yes, the Hampshire Chronicle, 1772, they seem to have been here forever. But there are others to laud and praise. Char, the Hambledon, Consortium, Bell Fine Art, the Winchester Bookshop, Jeremy France Jewellers, Reed's, among others. It is a long, resilient list.
This is the letter from Westminster from Steve Brine, who is the MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. "There has been much talk this year about the future of school funding, and it rightly featured heavily during the recent general election campaign. With small children of my own, I'm passionate about local schools. We may have protected the core schools budget, but any constituency MP doing his job knows full well rising costs are extremely challenging for head teachers right now. On top of that, the government is committed to introducing a new national funding formula, which caused concern in some schools when a consultation was put out by the DfE earlier this year. I have long campaigned for a fairer funding formula, because I do not accept the fact Hampshire remains among the lowest funded local education authorities in England, but we have to get it right. That is why I used all my experience and my position in government to get the view from Winchester and Chandler's Ford heard. The position of small rural schools, the basic level of funding required, and the future of the school forum were all live issues which ministers needed to better understand, and I am grateful to parents, heads and governors, as well as Councillor Roy Perry at Hampshire County Council. We fought hard to get a commitment in the Conservative manifesto that no school would have its budget cut as a result of the new formula, and that was welcome, as was the announcement last week that there will be an additional £1.3 billion for schools funding over 2018-19 and 2019-20. I met the Education Secretary before Parliament rose for summer recess, and I am pleased this boost to the core schools budget will deliver the biggest improvement to the school funding system for well over a decade. This additional funding to the Fairer Schools funding will mean an increase in the basic amount that every pupil will get, as well as protected funding for those with high needs, and will ensure Hampshire is in a position to give schools a cash increase through the new formula. This is excellent news and is another step to fulfilling our manifesto promise. I will be scrutinising the individual school allocations for 2018-19 when they are published in September and will remain close to constituency heads as always. I look forward to discussing this and many other issues with constituents during my 2017 summer tour, which kicks off this week.
Khalid Aziz writes, BBC Pay, another shock. The announcement of BBC top salaries has sparked a tsunami of consequences. Even Mrs. A this morning started muttering about equal pay. Naturally, I mouthed some emollient words, but I'm not sure she was satisfied. The disclosure of top talent pay at the BBC by the government is petty and pretty asymmetric. That is totally useless for any real debate in the absence of disclosure from other broadcasters. Pay has always been an issue at the BBC, as it is in all publicly funded organisations. By and large, employers don't reward equally either top talent or perceived top talent, ability or responsibility. I have always argued that MPs earn far less than they should, and in the end we get what we pay for. It's ridiculous too that the Prime Minister is paid so little, particularly when her salary is then used as a benchmark with voices shrilling. He's earning even more than the PM! That said, the BBC has managed to navigate itself up the proverbial creek, not just with a paddle, but in an entire rowing eight. So how has this happened? Now, time to reveal another shock BBC salary. I was first employed by the BBC in Plymouth as a trainee reporter in 1971 on £30 a week. A princely sum it was, too. Well, today it might be worth as much as £750 a week, about £30,000 a year. Not bad for a lad starting out, but was I worth it? My pay was as nothing when compared with the presenter gods of BBC South West. Of course, their salaries were firmly under wraps, but when the much-lamented Hugh Scully, later of Antiques Roadshow, turned up in a brand-new Rover 3500, we knew he wasn't on fourpence. Rising star Sue Lawley did well too, but her brand-new motor, in British Racing Green, just like Hugh's Rover, was a more modest Spitfire Mark IV. They were stars, and it was expected. Well, today it's different. The world is more egalitarian in outlook, if not practice. Jack is as good as his master. How the BBC brass must have winced when they disclosed that Hugh Edwards was earning in excess of £550,000 a year. Well, Hugh is a competent, if somewhat stolid, presenter, and it's hard to imagine why he justifies so much for mainly sitting in a warm studio when the likes of the estimable Middle East editor Jeremy Bowen is quite literally up to his neck in muck and bullets for under 200,000. For those who adore Radio 4 quite rightly see John Humphreys as its pater familias, but I wasn't expecting him to earn over £600,000 a year, whereas in my mind a figure of half would seem reasonable. It certainly doesn't compute when compared with Misha Hussain's £250,000, even accounting for his longevity. Which brings us to gender. Claudia Winkleman is the outlier here on £500,000. Peanuts when compared with Chris Evans' £2.5 million, but that's showbiz for you. The BBC must have been pleased that Clarkson has slung his hook. Sport is another murky area. Gary Lineker is worth £1.75 million a year to open on football because he's an ex-England striker and he's on TV. Whereas Radio's Jonathan Agnew, in my view a much more accomplished broadcaster, merits a mere £200,000. The most egregious example is Claire Balding, who also pulls down only £200,000 despite her ubiquity on the airwaves and a clear broadcasting talent married with deep knowledge. Who else could guide you so effortlessly through a race course paddock, clearly known and fondly regarded by the racing personalities and, what's more, able to secure off-the-cuff interviews with anyone she chooses? The sisters are up in arms, with scores, signing a letter, demanding parity. Woman's Hour's Jane Garvey, to my mind a superior broadcast to the whining Jenny Murray, seems to be leading the charge, but they should be careful of what they wish for. Once, quite rightly, pay parity is achieved, will they still be able to justify a Woman's Hour, unless we men get one too? Oh, I must go. Mrs. A is calling, no doubt with a new list of demands.
After all the activity we've seen in Winchester with the Hat Fair, followed by the Winchester Festival and then the Southern Cathedrals Festival, there's actually very little to report as what's going to be on over the next few weeks. However, a couple of items. On Saturday, August the 5th, from 6pm to 9pm, at the National Trust property at Hinton Apner, there is open-air theatre. It says it's the theatre is entitled Lost World, A Hilarious Look at Conan Doyle's Book. Apparently, the tickets are £16, and there is a slightly ominous footnote to the announcement. It says, dress for the weather, followed by many exclamation marks. And then on Tuesday, the 8th of August, at 1pm in the cathedral, there is a lunchtime concert, and Claire Jones will again be performing on her harp, helped by 25 of her friends who will be sharing 10 harps. Sounds like a foretaste of heaven. This is a free concert, but there will be a retiring collection. Lighting up times, sunrise around this time of year is at 5:30 in the morning and sunset is at 9 o'clock in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with the recording you have received from us, please contact Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. Before we start on the items of general news interest, we just had a little break in our presentation, and we were discussing the article by Khalid Aziz about Sarah's on the BBC. Just in case you're wondering how much the presenter and the readers of the Winchester Talking newspaper get paid, just to say that we're priceless.
Speak for yourself.
Anyway, we start off now with the items of general news interest.
Right. And, of course, the currently it is Jane Austen, isn't it? And there is an article here about Jane Austen's final journey being recreated. Under the sound of a tolling bell, Jane Austen was remembered at Winchester Cathedral. It was exactly 200 years to the day on Monday that the novelist was buried at a funeral attended by four mourners, her three brothers and a cousin. Around 60 Austen fans, some dressed in Regency costume, recreated her final journey. They left the house on College Street, where she had died on July the 18th, 2017. Sorry, that can't be right. It must be 1817. And walked under... Wasn't it? Yes. Yeah. And walked under the King's Gate into the close and into the cathedral. In a line, they passed by her tomb in the North Aisle before hearing a selection of readings by cathedral guides, including extracts of letters and two verses from Venter, the last poem she dictated to her sister, Cassandra, only 3 days before she died. And this article, briefly, is accompanied by a photograph of the fans and people remembering her walking past the judge's lodgings alongside the deanery into the cathedral.
Hundreds of students graduate from college. Sparsholt College students celebrated their academic achievements in style. Hundreds of students from the class of 2017 gathered at Winchester Cathedral, where they were handed their degrees at the annual graduation ceremony. Families, friends and lecturers were on hand to mark the occasion, which is the first ceremony under Sparsholt's new designation as a university centre. Principal Tim Jackson presided over the ceremonies and reflected on Sparsholt's achievements and highlighted the exciting developments within the faculties, which offer specialist degrees as diverse as aquaculture and zoo management. The graduation also included students from Andover College, which has links with Sparsholt. Special guests at the ceremony included College Vice President the Earl of Malmesbury, Chairman of Governors Michael Coombs, the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor David McLean, and the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester. Mr. Jackson said, "The past academic year has been another highly successful one for the college. Over 2,000 qualifications have been awarded, with around 700 of these being presented at today's two ceremonies. I know a lot of our students progress to our university centre, recognising the quality of the offer and the extent of the industry contacts and career openings available. When you consider the superb National Student Survey feedback given by our former students and the Silver Award for our teaching excellence, it's not difficult to see why." Joining Mr. Jackson was guest of honour and speaker Councillor Roy Perry, leader of Hampshire County Council. Before the presentation, he praised the students for doing something which interests and fulfils them and that they enjoy. During his address, Councillor Perry said, "This is an important day in your life, marking the conclusion of one phase in your education. It's a day that you will always remember, but note, it is one phase. Learning is lifelong, so must never stop. You have made a good start, but to really succeed in your dreams, my one word of advice is persevere." And there is a photograph of several students holding glasses of champagne, or these days it might be Prosecco, who knows, with their gowns and their mortarboards, and looking forward to the rest of their lives.
New interim bus station starts to emerge. Progress is being made in developing an interim bus station in Winchester city centre. Work will be undertaken to spruce up the building once the demolition of the 1930s garage is completed. The bus station office will be updated to improve conditions for passengers and staff, with the roof reclad. Council leader Caroline Horrell said July and August were chosen to undertake the work as it is the quietest time of year with school pupils and students on holiday. Buses are temporarily being deployed to the Broadway and are due to return to the station in early September. Councillor Horrell said, "The bus operators tell us that the temporary arrangements are working well. In the long term, once the Silver Hill area is redeveloped, there's a proposal that the bus station will move to the north side of Friars Gate."
Fire precaution. Winchester City Chiefs have closed facilities at four city blocks of flats following a safety inspection. The council has shut bin stores and refuse chutes at the four seven-storey blocks in Winnell. They are Braxton, Craddock, Dennett and Earl houses off Winnell Manor Road. It follows an inspection by City Council officers and staff from Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service. Council leader Caroline Horrell told Full Council, "We have just received advice following the inspection. The fire officer did suggest additional measures be added to bin stores and refuse chutes. As a precaution, we have temporarily decommissioned in each block whilst the work is being completed. We are working hard to reassure tenants that the existing fire safety measures are sufficient and appropriate for their circumstances. The four Winchester blocks are only seven stories, unlike Grenfell Tower, which was over 20. They do not have the aluminium composite cladding that is suspected of spreading the fire so quickly." At full council, Councillor Derek Green asked why fire extinguishers had been removed from some public areas in council flats, as revealed in the Chronicle. Councillor Horrell replied, "The council reviewed its fire safety policy in November 2015 and determined to only provide fire extinguishers at locations where staff are on site and trained in their use. Extinguishers were then removed from all other locations. This follows the most up-to-date national advice on fire safety in communal housing. Depending on the specific schemes, residents are advised either to stay put in their homes or to get out and stay out. Site-specific safety advice has been issued to all residents and has been resent in recent weeks as an additional reminder. In no cases would the City Council encourage any residents to actively fight a fire in a communal area. We will, of course, remain open to any advice or new advice that may come forward from the Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service or from government and national bodies, and will amend our procedures accordingly."
City store to shut. A high-end clothing shop in Winchester is set to close with the loss of nine jobs. Fashion retailer Cadogan & Co. on the square, in business for more than 20 years, has gone into administration. The shop will stay open to sell its remaining stock, but the business will eventually close, say administrators Begbie's Trainer. The business is the latest in a line of well-known names to close branches. Next, River Island, Jaeger and Maison Blanc have all ceased trading. The changing face of the retail landscape also has new retailers moving into the city, including TK Maxx, who will shortly move to the Brooks, Coretto, based where Shoe Zone once was on the High Street, and Tesco will move into the vacant space where River Island was on the High Street. City Councillor Ian Tate said the news was a serious blow to Winchester and he praised the owner of Cadogan, Alex Edwards, for his work. He added, "It will be hugely missed. People come into Winchester for the likes of Cadogan's and the Hambledon. I think it's a devastating blow for Winchester." Andrew Hook, manager at Begbie's Trainers Salisbury office, said the business had faced a number of problems. Initially, he said the business did well, with turnover reaching £1.6 million 10 years ago, but like many businesses, they were subsequently hit by the financial crash. The way people buy has changed dramatically too, with more and more people migrating online as a first port of call, and that's hit businesses like Cadogan hard. On top of that, in 2013, a delicatessen and cafe next door also closed down, and footfall reduced significantly. Andrew Hook also said the director of the business found that customers would increasingly wait for items to be put on sale, and suppliers often set up websites which offered discounts. Mr. Edwards was unavailable for comment.
Civic chiefs open to land purchase. Winchester Council leader Caroline Horrell has revealed the council is open to buying more land in the Silver Hill area, but that more compulsory purchase would be a last resort. She was speaking as councillors discussed the public consultation over the future of Central Winchester area, better known as Silver Hill. There has been a generally favourable response to the ideas proposed by JTP Architects for relaunching the development which collapsed last year. Councillor Victoria Weston asked at a full council, can the leader confirm that the council is not going down the compulsory purchase order route with regards to the Central Winchester regeneration project, but allowing the site to be developed organically and ensuring that the council's finances will not be stretched? Councillor Horrell replied, if an owner of a property in the Central Winchester area wishes to sell their interest, the council may consider purchasing this by agreement at market value. Alternatively, we welcome approaches from individuals who want to invest in their property in accordance with the emerging supplementary planning document, the SPD. As members are aware, following the purchase of the bus station, the City Council now owns the majority of the land. We've also heard from JTP in the warmly welcomed presentation on July the 4th that the Council could develop the Central Winchester area bit by bit. Our focus is on the development of the SPD to ensure that we create a vibrant new quarter for our city, but we will soon turn our attention to how this new quarter can be delivered. There are many options to consider, and our officer team will bring them forward for consideration in due course. Compulsory purchase was a main theme of the old scheme, but not this one. We have drawn a line, moved on, and are pleased that the people of Winchester Town are inspired by what we are creating for our city. There may be some instances where in order to achieve the wider community development objectives of the area, that a compulsory purchase order may be necessary. However, compulsory purchase would only be used as a last resort. There's been a great deal of interest in the site as a result of what we have done so far. Interest from all sorts of groups. The next informal policy group, which will be in private, will draw up planning guidance on August the 1st. Currently, technical reports are being prepared on archaeology and flooding risk. Meanwhile, with station approach, the council is supported by the RIBA and are looking at applications from architects.
New head for local Labour. Winchester Labour has elected a new chairman to replace Richard James, who has moved away. Peter Rees, a former Winchester City councillor and former chairman, takes over once again with the party enjoying a post-election boost. The local party membership is at a record of 1,132. Mr. Rees said, we owe an enormous debt of gratitude to Richard, who has done a brilliant job for the party, which has had to cope in such a short time with leadership elections, the referendum, city and county elections, as well as the general election, which came completely out of the blue. Labour, which in the late 1980s had six city councillors, was reduced to none after recent boundary changes abolished the ward, which was represented by Labour councillors. And this article is accompanied by a picture of Peter Rees, looking smilingly confident as the new chairman of Winchester Labour Party.
Scores of people helped by scheme. Winchester has seen 200 people using a government scheme to get on the housing ladder or move to a larger home. Figures have revealed that 200 people have used the Help to Buy scheme to buy a home in Winchester, and 137 of these are first-time buyers. The scheme enables anyone, both first-time buyers and existing owners, to put down just 5% as a deposit for their new home and to take advantage of a government equity loan providing access to more affordable mortgage rates. Help to Buy allows any home buyer to secure a brand new home under the value of £600,000 with a 5% deposit. The government lends the buyer 20% of the value of the property in the form of an interest-free equity loan for 5 years. Barton Farm, also known as King's Barton, is due to provide 800 affordable homes available to people currently on the City Council waiting list. The Council plans to build 300 council houses by 2020.
Student decision. Councillors will decide a controversial plan for two large student blocks in a Winchester suburb. People in Fulford are angry that JLW Winchester wants to build accommodation for 131 beds on Greenhill Road. The plans will be discussed at a planning meeting at Winchester Guildhall today. The developer says warden-managed halls are preferable to students occupying rented houses, which have caused issues in Stanmore and Winnell. However, residents say that the area is already overflowing with students and the plan has attracted 141 objections.
Jane chalks up 50 years of guiding. A Hampshire woman has been honoured for her 50 years of volunteering. Jane Rawlinson was presented with a specially designed brooch to recognise her work as Chandler's Ford Girl Guiding Volunteer. Jane, who is leader at 3rd Chandler's Ford Ramali Brownies, first became involved in guiding when she lived in Kenya and joined the Brownies before joining the Chandler's Ford group in 1967 and has supported hundreds of young girls since then. She said, "I'm extremely proud to receive this award. Volunteering for Girl Guiding is such a rewarding experience, and it's been wonderful to work with so many young women and girls over the years and see the difference guiding makes to their lives. Guiding opens up so many fantastic opportunities for girls to grow in their confidence and become a powerful force for good in their own communities. I would like to dedicate this award to all of the girls I have had the pleasure of knowing over the last 50 years." And this article is accompanied by a colourful photograph of some very exuberant brownies and guides in their uniforms, all clapping their commissioner, Jane Rawlinson.
Marwell Zoo celebrates the birth of endangered African wild ass. Staff at Marwell Zoo are celebrating the birth of a critically endangered African wild ass, giving a huge boost to one of the rarest animals in the world. 9-year-old Nadifa, who was also born at the zoo, and her foal are both happy and healthy. As Mum is left to establish a bond with her new foal, it will be another few days until keepers determine the sex of the new arrival. The birth is a huge boost to a species that's been on the critically endangered list since 1996, with estimates suggesting that there could be as few as 600 left in the wild today. Animal collection manager Ian Goodwin said, "This is a great achievement for Marwell. We are one of only three collections in the UK holding a breeding herd of African wild ass, which makes the arrival so important. We are all really proud to see this wonderful new addition doing so well." The wild population of the African wild ass is based in the harsh and remote lands of Eritrea and Ethiopia. It is not known whether any remain in Somalia. Marwell has always been key in the conservation of this special breed, and the first ever British-born African wild ass was born at Marwell in 1996. And there's a photograph here of mother and either son or daughter, we don't know yet. Very handsome animals with a sort of grey, shiny coat and interesting markings on the lower half of their legs.
Surgery closure blamed on GP recruitment problems. A surgery serving thousands of patients is to close by the end of this year, it has been revealed. Brown and Hill Surgery in Chalmersford will stop providing medical services to its 7,000 patients from November the 30th. The surgery gave the NHS West Hampshire Clinical Commissioning Group, CCG, notice, blaming workload pressures, difficulties in recruiting GPs and the retirement of a GP. Dr. Nigel Watson from the local medical committee, on behalf of Brown Hill Surgery, said, "At Brown Hill, we have tried really hard to provide the best care we can. Unfortunately, we have had GPs leave because of workload, and we have been unable to replace them. We are not alone in this problems, but it has hit us harder than most. We have worked hard to secure a stable future for the practice, but having been unable to achieve this. The CCG is carrying out a survey to find out if patients would prefer to use a practice or be allocated to others, including Fryon Surgery or Park Surgery and St Francis in Chalmersford Boyett Wood Surgery or St Andrew's Surgery in Eastleigh, North Battersley Surgery or Twyford Surgery in Winchester.
Nuns leave city base after 57 years. After 57 years, the nuns serving the Roman Catholic St Peter's Church in Winchester have left to live at their order's convent in Medstead near Alton. The remaining sisters of St Lucy, a teaching order, were Sister Joan, Sister Cecilia and Sister Mary Frances. A great party with lots to eat and drink and attended by scores of parishioners was held in the church grounds to say goodbye. Margie O'Brien and church colleagues provided the music. Sister Antoinetta, Sister Gigi, had also been a great help to Canon Paul Townsend in the last 12 years, he said. The sisters have served St. Peter's on Dury Street in many ways. They organise classes for instruction in First Holy Communion and Confirmation, instructed prospective converts, started the Senior Citizens Club, visited the sick at home and in hospital, and ran a thriving nursery school. Sister Cecilia became a permanent resident in 1985, closely followed by Mary Frances in 1995, he said. The canon added, "Over the years, the Sisters of St. Lucy have shown remarkable kindness and witness to Christ in this Winchester setting and touched so many lives. They will be greatly missed by everybody in the parish." The canon also said that the future of the White House, which is owned by the parish, was yet to be decided, but it would require a great deal of refurbishment work before it could be used again.
Argos moves to Superstore. Argos Digital Store has opened at a major supermarket in Winchester. Argos has moved from the Brooks Shopping Centre to Sainsbury's Badger Farm store. The move comes after Sainsbury's acquired Home Retail Group, which owns Argos. It will offer customers a range of popular products for immediate pickup, and a further 20,000 can be ordered to collect in store within a number of hours. An extra 20,000 products can also be ordered for home delivery. There will also be an eBay and DPD collection point.
Campaign to get Hampshire flag flying. The Wessex Society is campaigning for Hampshire to have its own official flag. Currently is one of only four without such a symbol. A relatively recent phenomenon, there are now 47 recognised county flags on the flag registry maintained by the Flag Institute. The Society says flags are an excellent means of promoting local identity and inspiring local pride. It's only right that Hampshire, with its rich history and keen sense of local identity, should enjoy the same opportunity to celebrate its heritage, it says. The Society is hoping to remedy the absence with a county flag competition. Details to be announced shortly. And my colleagues here have challenged me to describe all 47 county flags, which are here in on this picture in front of me. But fortunately for you, I'm not up to the task.
Thank you. Romsey Vicar to take on new role. A prominent Hampshire vicar has secured a promotion to become a cathedral dean. The vicar of Romsey, Tim Sledge, has been appointed the new dean of Peterborough and will take up the post on October the 15th, having served in Romsey since 2008. A residential canon of Winchester Cathedral since 2014, he said, "It is a huge change. There is a massive amount to do here. The cathedral has been in financial difficulties and needs to get on to a more stable footing. That is what I have been tasked to do." The Right Reverend Tim Dakin, Bishop of Winchester, wished Mr. Sledge good luck in his new role. "Tim's contribution to Romsey and the wider community has been exceptional. We will all be very sorry to see him go." During his time at Romsey Abbey, Mr. Sledge led a 7-year development plan. This focused on growing the church's work with young families on discipleship, spirituality, community work, and the creative use of buildings and heritage. He also worked with the local authority and other partners in Romsey to set up a consortium to promote the town as a visitor destination, resulting in a 15% increase in visitor numbers. He established a link between the Abbey and the Anglican province of Burundi and has made several visits there.
Decision day on 76 homes. A major council scheme for scores of new homes and flats in Winchester will be decided today. I assume that actually meant yesterday, because today is Friday. The City Council want to build 76 homes at the Valley, Stanmore. The scheme, which is recommended for approval, has had 20 letters of objection, and some councillors have previously questioned whether the plans are value for money. The plan consists of 62 flats and 14 homes, of which 30 are one-bed flats, 29 are two-bed flats, 11 two-bed homes, 2 3-bed homes, and 2 3-bedroom shared homes for people under the age of 35. Within the scheme, there is also a wheelchair-friendly bungalow and a 3-bedroom wheelchair-friendly home. Councillor Ian Tate has previously said that he fears that what is being built is not family homes, which he has been calling for the council to build, and Councillor Eileen Berry also raised concerns that the homes are not big enough for families. The plans form part of Winchester City Council's strategy to provide new council homes.
Shops closed at lunch. More fascinating nuggets from the special edition of the Trust News celebrating the 80th anniversary of the City of Winchester Trust. It compares the city of 1957 with that of 2017. There are quaint reminders of the past. Early closing day was on Thursday. Yes, any readers under the age of 40, shops really did close at lunchtime one day a week. The built-up area in 1957 was 865 hectares compared with the present 1,171, an increase of about a third. In the late 1950s, much of Stanmore, Wick and Winnall were just dreams in the eyes of developers and planners, let alone Hairstock or Badger Farm. The population has grown from 27,150 to 45,184 in 2011, a rise of around 66%. Perhaps most tellingly, the population density has risen from 31 people per hectare to 39 people. This is probably a reflection of the increase in the number of flats, as well as the infill development of back gardens as the expansion of the city outwards stalled between the 1980s and the building of Badger Farm and the start of this year the development of Barton Farm. How big will the city be in another 60 years? The city will almost certainly stretch up to Three Maids Hill and have swallowed Pitt. Will it have leapfrogged the M3 toward eastwards towards Mournhill and Chilcombe?
Bottleneck fears for a town. Fears that Alresford could become a bottleneck for traffic were raised by concerned residents at a meeting about 100 of new homes. More than 80 residents packed into Alresford Recreation Centre, where they had their say on plans by Seaward Properties to build 320 homes on land east of Sun Lane. Under the scheme, 40% of the homes would be affordable, and there would also be 3.4 hectares of employment land and 40 acres of open space. Part of the plans include a new all-moves roundabout from the A31 bypass and the realignment of Sun Lane. However, residents fear the development will lead to major traffic issues. The meeting heard that the traffic increase due to the scheme will be just an additional 5 cars at peak time. However, this claim was met with mutters from residents, one of whom said, "Ridiculous," and later shouted, "No way, 320 homes and 5 cars? Another resident said the issue is that the junction is going to become the main route into Alresford, and he accused Seaward of, quote, misleading, unquote, the public by only having a narrow scope for the traffic survey. The resident claimed that a survey done by Hampshire County Council was wrong. Paul Cranley from Iceni Projects, who are the traffic consultants for the project, answered concerns and said the traffic assessment had been very detailed. Steve Colpitt, Seaward Land and Planning Director, said that should Hampshire County Council Highway Authority say work is needed to be done, they are ready to do it. Mr. Culprit said it is up to Hampshire Highways to say if they are happy or not. Robin Atkins, a former town council chairman, said he believed the roundabout would bring more traffic into Alresford. Mr. Atkins said the roundabout is going to be the predominant way into Alresford so that the avenue coming from Winchester will become much less used. It certainly will be traffic chaos unless they spend lots of money on improving the roads. Alresford and Itchen Valley City Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who was at the meeting, said he hopes that genuine affordable housing is delivered by the scheme. Councillor Gottlieb said, "My own preference was for the alternative proposal whereby the housing allocation would be distributed on several smaller sites across the town. However, now that the local plan has confirmed Sun Hill as the policy location, it is incumbent on the city, on the local city and town councillors to ensure that the development is as attractive and as well planned as can be, and that all the promises, particularly those relating to affordable housing, are delivered. The plans will be decided by Winchester City Council in the coming weeks. Under the local plan, Alresford has to find room for some 500 homes until 2031. The siting of homes off Sun Hill has been keenly fought."
MEP back in Winchester to discuss poor air quality. MEP Keith Taylor returns to St Bede's School. A Green MEP revisited Winchester's schools and civic chiefs to discuss air quality. Keith Taylor, MEP for the South East, met pupils at St Bede Primary School and King's School, where he learnt about their pupil-led eco-teams before sitting down with the City Council to debate its air quality plan. Jean McGregory, School Travel Planning Officer for Hampshire County Council, said, "Reducing car travel, promoting park and stride, and switching off idling engines whilst parents wait for their children will help improve air quality around schools. We are working with schools to encourage walking, cycling and scooting to school, which not only helps to improve air quality, but also means children are fitter and arrive at school more alert and able to learn." Mr. Taylor, who visited St. Bede in 2011, said, "I'm pleased to see a positive, pupil-led project in action, because it's abundantly clear that urgent action on air pollution is needed." And there's a photograph here of the Green MEP, Keith Taylor, talking to, I did a quick count, 13 young students at St. Bede School about air pollution. But it tells me, though, in the caption that this actually was photograph taken in July 2011, so it's not entirely up to date.
Mm-hmm. Right. And is he really green?
He is.
"999 patients to be assessed on Skype. Hampshire patients who ring the ambulance service on 999 could soon be assessed by a video call technology such as Skype if their condition is deemed non-life-threatening. A trial is underway to see if face-to-face smartphone apps could allow medics to make more accurate decisions by viewing injuries," the South Central Ambulance Service, SCAS, revealed. The authority, which covers four regions in southern England, including Hampshire and Southampton, said the move could help offset the difficulties posed by diagnosing a patient over the phone without being able to see them. It said other ambulance trusts were also testing out the idea. Many social media apps now offer video calling services, including Facebook and WhatsApp. A spokesman for SCAS said this was initially started at certain nursing homes who were frequent callers to our service. This gives the clinician more information as they can see the patient and view the injury severity, symptoms, etc. Other revelations about the work of the ambulance service, including that it operates a no-send policy for its vehicles to the lowest-risk patients during times of peak demand. SCAS said that this was to allow them to prioritise those most at risk if resources are under strain. During such times, there is also a taxi firm which provides, which works with the authority to provide an alternative mode of transport if no ambulances are available to rush people to hospital, it added.
New role for the former city mayor. A well-known and popular face is returning to the head of a Winchester organisation. Dominic Hiscock has taken over as Winchester Rotary President for 2017-18. Mr. Hiscock of Worthy Lane Hyde is a long-serving city councillor, first elected in 1999 and former chairman of St. Bede Primary School Board of Governors, and served as mayor as 2009-10. Fiona Whitehouse handed over the chain of office recently after a very successful year, in which over £50,000 was raised for good causes at home and overseas. In her review of the year, she said that she very much hoped the club, one of the largest in Hampshire, would continue to raise its profile in the local community. Mr. Hiscock said he was delighted to be the club's next president and is looking forward to an action-packed year, as the club continues to seek out rewarding new charitable projects. Fundraisers organised by Winchester Rotary include the Clarendon Marathon and Swimathon. It has an active environment section involved in the Keeping Rivers Cool project, working with the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust. Rotary members also work with other organisations by marshalling for the Round Table Bonfire and Fireworks in Winchester and the Park Run. Some members drive stroke sufferers to their weekly stroke club meeting.
Charges to see Round Table. The historic Great Hall in Winchester is now charging visitors. Home to the Round Table, the 13th century building, previously free to enter, is now asking for £3 for adults and £2 for children from the age of 5 to 16. Meanwhile, senior citizens, students and disabled card holders will pay £2.50. Questions have been raised on how much consultation was done and whether the charges will reduce visitor numbers. City Councillor Martin Todd said, "With the brutal cuts pushed through centrally, we're going to see a lot more of this sort of thing, with charges increasing across the board being put up, and what we get in return is going down. I think it's disappointing no consultation about this. Winchester businesses and residents..." I'm sorry, I've no idea what that means at all. Skip that paragraph. "I think the fact that lots of people are surprised shows that it's not properly communicated or thought through." Executive Member for Culture, Recreation and Countryside, Councillor Andrew Gibson, says the charge is fair, but admitted that he was unsure about consultation. Hampshire County Council later confirmed they did carry out one. Councillor...
one.
Councillor Gibson said, "What do we do? Do we spend money on the Great Hall and keep it free, or do we reduce our adult care budget? We had a donation box for a while, and we said £3 would be a good figure. In my portfolio, most things I am making profitable, and the Great Hall is quite expensive to maintain. There were good times where we all worked and got massive big pensions, and there are people who have big pensions and are not used to paying for things, but times have changed," he said. "We have massive budget problems, and we are talking about the £140 million we have to cut because we are getting less from the government." Professor Martin Biddle, eminent archaeologist who has led several digs in Winchester over the last 50 years, said the charge was inevitable. He said, "I think it's necessary. I'm not surprised that it has to charge, and I think the charges are quite reasonable. The Great Hall as a building alone is very expensive to maintain, and it's very popular with tourists, and always will be." A statement from the council said, "A £3 adult entry fee was introduced to help secure the long-term future of the Great Hall, as unfortunately donation levels were below expectations for supporting visitor talks, activities and the maintenance of the 13th century building. We were proactive in consulting Great Hall visitors over two-week periods, and the £3 entry fee was the option that received the greatest support. Partner organisations and stakeholders such as Winchester Tourist Information, Visit Winchester, Hampshire Cultural Trust were also informed before the entry fee was introduced.
New president at the Inner Wheel Club. The Inner Wheel Club of Winchester has a new president. Dinah Robbins has taken over the role from Carol Steele, who raised several hundred pounds for a number of charities during her presidential year. This will be the second time Diana has been president of the Winchester Club, but her previous club in Alton, she was also in the role three times. Several fundraising events are planned for her year, together with many interesting speakers. One of her chosen charities is Limb Care, a charity to help and care for non-service personnel and child amputees. Inner Wheel is one of the largest women's voluntary service organisations operating throughout the world, founded in 1924.
Spider alert. It was an easy error to make. An Alsford family called the RSPCA after mistaking a child's plastic toy for a giant spider. The family called inspectors who rushed to the address where they safely removed the toy. They originally told the RSPCA that a tarantula, which was the size of a hand, was in an upstairs cupboard. RSPCA inspector Nikki Denham said she had left it there in there, not touching it, and called us for assistance. I turned up with gloves and nets to confine the creature, and the woman left me to it, shutting doors around me to prevent its escape. And there is a photograph of this rather gruesome-looking brown tarantula spider. It's got its four pairs of legs, which is correct, and various other things, but surely it looks like a toy plastic thing, not a live spider.
On that salutary note, we end our extract for this week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. And thanks also to our various technical teams. And thanks also to our readers, who were Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.